You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is 11/17/21. Well, as usual, we're focusing on the market, but how much more can it go? How much left in it? What is the Fed going to do? Will the Fed kill the market or will they kill the currency? It could very well come down to a choice between the two. We're really blessed to have with us financial expert today, Anthony Saccaro. You can find him at providencefinancialinc.com. Anthony, it's great to have you back on the show. It's been a while. We were talking earlier, what is the Fed to do and what can they do? Are they boxed in? And is the outcome kind of predetermined here?
Yeah, great question. And yeah, thank you, Carrie, for having me back. I know it's been a little while. The Federal Reserve is somewhat in a precarious position. The challenge is they're mandated to control inflation. That's one of their two mandates, inflation and employment. And the unemployment rate has been doing well for a number of years pre-COVID. And they hadn't raised the interest rates for a long time because GDP was low. They were trying to get it above 2%. They couldn't do it. So they were basically saying that inflation's got to get a little higher and unemployment has to stay down in order for them to actually raise interest rates. Well, now unemployment is low. It's still higher than it was pre-COVID, but it's still within their range. And yet inflation, I think our last reading was 5.6% or thereabouts, somewhere north of 5%. So now, based on their two mandates, low unemployment and high inflation, they really are forced to raise interest rates. If they don't, then inflation's got a chance to get out of control. And if they do raise interest rates, then that's not going to be good for the market. So they're really in a position to where no matter what they do, it's going to be bad on the market. If they don't do anything and inflation continues to go through the roof, then that's not going to be good for the market. If they raise interest rates, that's not going to be good for the market either. And so it's really the lesser of two evils. I actually think the worst of the two evils at this point is letting inflation continue to run. I think that's the worst scenario. Now, there's also an argument or debate about why we have this inflation. And I think that's extremely important too. You know, the question is whether inflation is a result of, is temporary or transitory, or whether inflation is going to be long-term. You've got the Federal Reserve saying it's transitory, which of course is what they're going to say, because they don't want you to think it's going to be long-term and they want to get themselves out of the corner that they're backed into. And then you have a lot of people in the know, analysts and economists, saying that it's going to be longer term. But the reason for the inflation really is because of the bottleneck and everything that's going on in Los Angeles. I think there were 75 ships that were out at sea. There's not enough workers to be able to unload these ships. That's part of the problem. And I personally think this is something that's going to work itself out within the next 6 to 12 months. So I believe that inflation is going to be more transitory. Now, the challenge is that the inflation that's already occurred, if we have a couple of years at 5% per year, so we have 10% inflation over 2 years, well, the challenge is the economy is not going to give that back. So it's not going to come back. They're not going to give it back. So from that regards, any inflation that we have is going to be permanent. But going forward, we just hope that it settles off on a lower level. So the Federal Reserve has to deal with this. If the Federal Reserve tries to offset what I believe is transitory inflation too quickly, too fast, well, then guess what? If they're too aggressive with their tones or too aggressive in raising rates, that's going to spook the market. And with the market at record highs at this point, it could be the snowball that causes the avalanche. And that's what a lot of people are afraid of at this point.
Oh, look, if we go back here, Anthony, and we look, inflation's been relatively tame, even under these distorted numbers that have changed numerous times over the years. But once they started with the stimulus and they were just printing trillions of dollars out of thin air, and then we had more money, and then we had less goods and services available because of the lockdowns, because of the pandemic response. So inflation was baked in the cake. So now we've got inflation really running out of control. Social Security is getting a 6% increase, but at the same time, Medicare beneficiaries are getting a 14+% increase in their premiums. We're seeing all of this take place. And like you say, once it's baked in the cake, the other thing is you start to have inflationary expectations where people just expect prices to go higher. And you and I were both alive during the stagflation 70s, where towards the end, inflation was running in double digits and people were just buying everything they could just to get rid of a declining dollar. You don't think that we're going back to the future here?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to go back to that era where we had double digit treasury rates, and so on, like we did back in the 80s and so on. The reality, though, I think the Fed's going to keep that under control. But the problem is what's going to happen to the stock market as the Federal Reserve raises interest rates to curtail that. That's really going to be the big issue. And again, there are people, analysts and economists, that think that we are going to have longer term inflation for a while. But they're talking 5% and 6%. No one's talking tulip mania. No one's talking like we did back in the 70s. And because the Federal Reserve has tools in the form of raising inflation, especially since they're at zero, I should say, in the form of raising interest rates, to be able to combat that. And so I don't think the Fed's going to let that get out of control. And interestingly enough, when you look at the flip side of that, if they do raise interest rates too much or they're too aggressive in their language and it does start that avalanche of the stock market, that stock market snowball, the reality is that the government, the Federal Reserve, has also told us with their actions that they're going to try to do everything they can to keep that from happening by printing more money. You know, money printing is in reality supposed to be a temporary Band-Aid. I agree with all the printing with the COVID crisis and businesses shutting down and the PPP loans and having to get people on unemployment, but that was supposed to be temporary. But now what's happening is the government is building an economy based on printing money. And it's almost like stocks are now a safe asset class. That's almost how they're being viewed, because the Federal Reserve is going to just print more money if they start to crash. Well, guess what? That can't happen. And at some point in time, that house of cards is going to get so big that when it blows over, no matter how much you print, no matter how low you go interest rates, even after raising them, it's not going to stop the avalanche. We saw that in 08. We saw that in 01. And we could have another avalanche coming. And you just need to be prepared. We're not trying to scare anyone, but you need to be prepared either way. If your future depends on what happens with the stock market, you're invested wrong. You need to have a long-term time horizon when you have any money in stocks. And if what happens in the stock market in the next year or two or 5 years or 10 years, if that's going to affect your life, if that's going to affect your retirement, and maybe you won't be able to retire if the stock market goes against you, you are invested wrong. And that's important to know, too.
So here's the thing. You've advised thousands of people over the years here, Anthony, in their investments. What is Joe Sixpack supposed to do here? And what's Steve Chardonnay supposed to do?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
American Eagle Gold is focused on exploring for a world-class gold deposit on its flagship property, Golden Gate, located in the Cortez Trend, next door to Barrick Gold and Newmont Mining's Gold Rush and Cortez Mine. They have produced over 27 million ounces of gold. The company plans to drill and advance its relatively unexplored property and continue to focus on acquiring and advancing gold projects in the area. Vice President of Exploration Mark Bradley was at the helm of the team that discovered and defined Gold Rush and has spent the better part of 30 years working on the Cortez Trend. American Eagle trades under the symbol AE on the TSX Venture. For more information and to sign up for notifications, go to AmericanEagleGold.ca.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, great question. So I think it depends on where you are in life. If you're still in the accumulation phase of life and you have 15 to 20 years or more ahead of you, I say stick the course with stocks and continue dollar cost averaging. Continue putting in over and over again. Your dollar cost averaging is going to be your saving grace. And if the stock market goes down and your portfolio goes down, that actually helps you, because as the price of the market goes down and you're still putting money in over and over again, you get to buy the stocks on the cheap. And so dollar cost averaging is one thing you want to keep doing. And I'm going to suggest also that you use dividend stocks to do it. And that's hard to do. Matter of fact, if you're in a 401k, that's impossible to do because you're not going to get a net dividend on mutual funds in your 401k. Those are going to be eaten up with the fees and everything else. So it's tough to do. But if you have money outside of a 401k and you control and have the options of where to put that money, put it in dividend paying stock, because now what happens is when you get the dividends, you can dollar cost average the dividends in as the market grows. And instead of having no growth over a period that the market crashes and recovers, if you're dollar cost averaging your dividend back in, you come out smelling like a rose. So you want to focus on dividend paying stock, even if you're in the accumulation phase of life, the younger individual with 15 to 20 years to go. Now, if you're in the older phase of life, maybe 50 plus, you know, let's say within 10 years or so of retirement, you've got to be more cautious. If you're invested in growth stocks and you know that in 5 or 10 years, you're going to want to start getting money out of your portfolio, well, guess what? You can't do any planning with that. The best you can do is guessing. If you've got a certain amount of money, $1 million, let's say, on the stock market, what's that going to be worth in 2 years or 5 years when you want to retire? The answer? You have no idea. It's a guessing game as to what the value is going to be worth. In 5 years, your $1 million could be half of what it is right now, or it could be double. So the reality is the market, if the market has to go in your direction in order for you to be able to retire, you're invested wrong. What you need to do is focus on investments that are going to protect your principal and are going to give you interest and dividends that you can actually spend without having to sell any shares. And there's a whole universe of options out there that are available. Most advisors don't specialize in those options. It really takes an income specialist like us at Providence Financial to help you with that. But the reality is that you can invest in a portfolio that will give you interest and dividends that will remain the same and very consistent regardless of what the market does. And that's the direction I think you want to go if you're in retirement or close to it.
All right. So talking about these dividend, so-called dividend aristocrats, companies that have been paying out increasing rates of dividends for decades and decades, and really they have excess cash flow. What about if inflation continues, though? What segment of the market is most set to profit from continued inflation, Anthony?
Well, the nice thing is that when you have dividend paying stock, it's going to fluctuate a lot less than your non-dividend paying stock. If you look at dividend paying stock, the S&P 500 over the last 50 years, and if you take the S&P 500 and segment it into two categories, dividend payers and non-dividend payers, over the last 50 years, the non-dividend payers have averaged a return of 8.4%. The dividend payers, Carrie, have averaged a return of 12.9%. Over the last 50 years. But get this, they've done it.
Dividends?
I'm sorry, one more time.
I'm sorry, is that investing all your dividends?
That is exactly right. That is reinvesting all of your dividends. It's averaged 12.9% average return. But get this, Gary, it did it with one third less risk, one third less volatility. And here's why. And you hit the nail on the head. I suspect you know where I was going. The reason is not because of the dividend by itself. The dividend on the S&P 500 is 1.5% or less, generally speaking. It's not just because of the dividend and the 50 years of compounding. The magic of as to why there was a 50% more return with dividend payers than non-dividend payers has to do with the dollar cost averaging. As all the markets crash and recover, you dollar cost average the dividends back in and you compound your return. So it gives you 50% greater return with one third less volatility. So if you're getting the dividend and inflation does whatever it does, the economy does whatever it does, whoever is president, you still can count on the dividend. And there's a lot of stocks out there. There's over 10% of the S&P 500. I think there's like 55 stocks or so out there that not only have held their dividend every year for 25 years or more, but have actually increased the dividend every single year for 25 years or more. That means there's companies out there that increase their dividends in 08. Companies that increase their dividend in 01 with the tech crash. So they're out there. And yes, these companies can change the dividend anytime they want, but they've shown through their track record and their history that they don't want to do it. And a question that we get asked all the time when I have this conversation with our clients, just because we are retirement experts, we focus on income. You know, it's why, if that's true, Anthony, why does not everyone talk about dividend income? Well, the answer is because it's a specialty. It's very difficult to build a portfolio portfolio of dividend payers. When you start running a query on stocks that are dividend payers and pay more than, say, 3% yield, you get a short list very quickly. And so the reality is it's very difficult to do. So most advisors are growth oriented, are really entry level, if you will. They're generalists, and anything that's a stock is fair game. To become an income specialist is really a specialty. You know, it's the difference between the general practitioner as a doctor and the oncologist or cardiologist. You know, most doctors get to that level of general practitioner, and guess what? That's where they stop. They're done with school. They're not going to read another book, and they're done. But there's a select few doctors that are going to go on and do another 50% education or maybe even double education to become these specialists. And that's where income specialists are. So 90% of all advisors are growth related. They're general practitioners. There's very few advisors like us that have gone on to get the additional education to become income specialists, to be able to help you invest for income, whether you're in the accumulation phase or whether you're in the retirement phase. So it's not that it doesn't work. It's just most advisors have never gotten that level of education, and it's much more difficult.
And two other things, people who invest in dividend stocks are different than growth investors. They're in it for income. So when there are market disruptions, they're less likely to sell. The other thing is the tax bill that changed treatment of dividends and added an exclusion to it. It must be 15 years ago already. Really changed the whole playing field. But I was saying it at the time, most people didn't realize, because you got 80% of your dividends are tax exempt, if you will. The rate on dividends was cut from the ordinary rate down to 15%. What are they now? 20%, Anthony, the tax rate on dividends?
Yeah, it depends on where your income level is, actually. And it depends on what state you're in as to what it's going to be. But it could be 15%. It could be in California as high as 24%.
Right, which is still lower than the rate on ordinary income, but equivalent to the rate basically on capital gains, right?
That's exactly right. Equivalent on the capital gains rate. But a lot of these people have, as you noted, have their retirement accounts and dividend accounts inside qualified money or IRAs, which means that it's all tax exempt. So it's not relevant anyway.
It's not going to matter in that case, but for those who don't. So all these things have really changed the playing field. Well, we kind of have to wrap up here, Anthony, as far as what you're recommending people to do. You know, one other thing we didn't talk about is that ETFs, as opposed to mutual funds, have great estate planning purpose usefulness. And you can get these high paying dividend ETFs, and that can fit into your estate planning strategy pretty well as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reason it fits into estate planning is because you've got the capital gains appreciation on the ETFs. And so what that means for your listeners that might not know is that when you die, if you leave a highly appreciated portfolio of ETFs or stocks, I will, to your next generation, they get what's called a step up in basis, which means that the moment that they inherit it, that is going to be the value that they are going to assume to have bought it at. So for example, if you have a portfolio that you paid $500,000 for, and now your portfolio is worth $1 million, if you sell that portfolio, you're going to have to pay capital gains tax on $500,000. But if you leave that $1 million portfolio to the next generation, the IRS is going to assume that they bought that portfolio at $1 million. So if they inherit it as $1 million and they sell it at $1 million, the capital gains is wiped out. They get what's called a stepped up in basis, and ETFs, stocks are absolutely prime for this scenario.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad we got that point across. I wasn't that artful as you in stating it. Anthony, people want to connect with you, want to find out more about what you can do for them to help them plan for their retirement, hold on to what you've worked so hard to earn. Where is the best place to find you? How do they connect with you?
Yeah, thank you, Kerry. The best place is at our homepage, providencefinancialinc.com. And from our homepage, there's a link to my radio show. As you know, Kerry, I host a radio show for 6 or 7 years in Southern California on KRLA at 9:30 on Saturday morning. And we also have a podcast. And I have to tell you, Kerry, you and I have been friends for years, and you were influential in me starting my podcast. So they can link to my podcast as well through providencefinancialinc.com.
Excellent. Hey, we really appreciate you coming on again, Anthony. A lot of wisdom, a lot of common sense in what you had to state there. If you've got a question for Anthony, just shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. We'll get you an answer. Don't forget, sign up for the free newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Anthony, been a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming back on.
Thank you for having me. Good talking with you, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.